you smell what Barack has cooked?
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
My name is Chris Kelly.
We are sitting in Washington, D.C., home of the Trump Hotel. Just go to Pennsylvania Avenue, and you could find it right there. We're also the authors of the book, The Donald, How Trump Turned Presidential Politics into Pro Wrestling, which is available at DonaldTrumpIsAWrestler.com. Because that's a thing. That's a real thing. We have a president who is in the WWE Hall of Fame, and I bring this up quite a bit. When he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, he said it was the greatest honor of his life. He has yet to say that about being the president of the United States of America. And I would tend to agree.
Yeah, and it is short into his reign. I mean, presidency, day 16. We're recording this on Saturday, February 4th, day 16 of the Trump presidency.
It is noon, and by the time that you are hearing this, be it in 1 hour, 2 hours, or 2 days, the world will have changed quite a bit.
Yes, that is the tough thing of doing a podcast during the Trump presidency, a podcast about the intersections of the worlds of pro wrestling and politics, because as we'll see as we're doing this today, things change as much with a tweet, with every episode of Raw. Something is changed, but we will try to keep it up to date.
Since our last episode, Linda McMahon has proceeded and progressed to a full Senate vote. She passed her committee with an 18-1 vote. There was one dissenting senator. That dissenting senator was Senator Cory Booker from the great state of New Jersey. Cory Booker, right before you asked Linda McMahon his first question, had this to say.
Ms. McMahon, I want to thank you for being here. It means a lot to serve your country and to step forward and be willing to make the kind of sacrifices you're going to have to make in this position. So I'm grateful for your patriotism. I want to also just say when your daughter and son-in-law stood up, just want to say for the record that your daughter is far more fierce and intimidating than your son-in-law.
That's sexist.
Yes, well... He and I are about the same age, almost exactly the same age, and Paul's letting himself slip a little bit. So after this, maybe we should go to the Senate gym so I can give Triple H some triple help in getting back in shape.
Well, Stephanie might could give you a mean hip toss.
So Cory Booker really likes to fawn over Triple H and Stephanie and then dissent over her nomination process. It's an interesting thing. Not one person in the Senate subcommittee asked about WrestleMania attendance numbers, because that might have something to do with inauguration attendance numbers. Tammy Duckworth out of the great state of Illinois, the CM Punk's home state, talked about healthcare, which was quite interesting, but Tammy voted for Linda McMahon to progress.
Yes, and you had an op-ed about this in Roll Call this week.
I had an op-ed in Roll Call this week. Roll Call is one of those real news sites, fake news sites. I don't know anymore.
It's like a dirt sheet for the Capitol Hill.
There you go.
Yeah.
You might have read our stuff in Slate about Linda's nomination process. So the longer Linda McMahon stays in Washington, D.C., the more we'll be writing about her. And I want to make it perfectly clear, regardless of your politics, she is incredibly qualified for the job, unlike maybe some of the other nominees for the Trump administration.
Yeah, as the WWE tells its story, they were a small business. And as part of her nomination, she talked about how they had to rent the typewriter every month. They didn't know if they're going to make it. But
that just does not seem like a good, like, invest in a typewriter.
Yeah, I mean, what was the typewriter budget back then? But yeah, they were a small business until they put all the other small businesses out of business, which we'll talk about a little later today. But first, we will start with the week's big show.
Well, oh God. It's a big show.
Yeah, so this week, since we last recorded, the big thing was the Muslim ban. If you remember back in December 2015, right after the San Bernardino terrorist attack, an official statement from the Trump campaign said that a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on was in order. On January 27th, President Trump signed an executive order. It temporarily prohibits from entering the U.S. virtually all people traveling on passports from 7 countries: Iraq, Syria, Iran, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, and Yemen. All are majority Muslim countries. And this is for 120 days and for an indefinite amount of time for Syrian refugees.
The dates on this really matter. Not so much the December 2015 date, but definitely the January 27th date. This was done in the afternoon of January 27th, which was a Friday. So it was just mass hysteria at most airports around the United States that have international travelers. And it's still sort of a train wreck of what's going on because no one really knows what's going on. There are lawyers at most major American airports that have international travelers trying to figure out what's going on. This is something that usually isn't done within a week of a presidency. This is not usually something that's done and enacted as an executive order late on a Friday afternoon.
Yes, without, from some of the reports, without communication with Department of Justice, Homeland Security, the people who are going to have to actually enforce this, the people who are, to paraphrase their report, you know, what the hell is going on?
So because of that, we still don't know what's going on. It's been a week. As of today, something happened. But let's just trace back the last week.
Right. So the numbers kind of coming out, the estimate is that 100,000 visas were suspended. Not, they were talking about maybe about 100 people who are being held at airports. These numbers are all fluctuating, but we've had, there's been responses everywhere. I mean, there's the international response in some of these calls with foreign leaders about refugees from their countries and different immigrant issues. Trump is somehow kind of feuding with Australia, who's one of our strong allies, and also possibly threatened to invade Mexico, but the Mexican authorities have push back on that.
The NPR Politics podcast brought this up this week, and I think it's an incredibly important point. When you read Trump, it sounds a lot different than when you listen to Trump. So if you listen to Trump, it doesn't seem that bad. It's just him on a phone call. But if you read the transcript, it does read like we're going to go to war with Mexico.
Yeah.
I hope we don't go to war with Mexico. If we go to war with Mexico, wrestling will really suck.
Yeah, that's where luchadors come from, guys. Also, you know, something that's kind of close to our purview here is on Friday, Iran banned U.S. wrestlers from the Freestyle World Cup in response to the Muslim ban, with the so-called Muslim ban.
And we like to talk about professional wrestling because it's way more fun to talk about fake sports. But where do you think the fake sport athletes come from? Real sports. Does American Alpha exist if they're not allowed to compete, if one of them isn't allowed to compete in the Olympics, if the other one doesn't compete in Indiana State? Does Dolph Ziggler become Dolph Ziggler if he doesn't spend time at Kent State?
Kurt Angle going to the Hall of Fame this year.
Exactly.
Without being a real wrestler.
These are one of the two biggest paths to the WWE, the other being the NFL, and we'll get to that much later. But this is not good for wrestling. It's, put simply, not a good thing.
Right. So the political response has been on Friday. A U.S. District Court judge, James Robart, who was a George W. Bush appointee, issued a restraining order until we can figure out what the hell's going on, basically.
He was a George W. Bush appointee that was voted in, I think, 99-0. He had no dissenting votes.
Yes. And this morning, Saturday, President Trump tweeted that the opinion of this so-called judge, which essentially takes law enforcement away from our country, is ridiculous and will be overturned. So, you know, the usual quick kind of turnaround on the tweets we see from Trump. But, you know, the most interesting response we've seen in the stuff, you know, as we cover politics and pro wrestling, is from Sami Zayn.
The voice of the underground. Is it the voice of the underground?
It's the underdog from the underground.
Yeah, okay, whatever that may be. Apparently, the underground is Canada, because Sami Zayn, arguably one of the most fun wrestlers on the main roster.
Yeah.
Definitely a fan favorite. Definitely a guy that, well, not definitely, but probably a guy that wouldn't have been on the main roster 15 years ago. Relatively small. He's incredibly over with a lot of people, and he's Canadian.
Yes, but he's also of Syrian descent.
Which matters. So he's been political for the past few months, mostly on Twitter. On January 28th, he said, "I can't articulate how truly disgusted I am right now. Hashtag Muslim ban." That was a week ago. Okay, let's trace this back a little bit further. On November 9th, horrible nightmare last night. It was so weird. I was in Germany, but the U.S. was Germany now. But from like 80 years ago, so weird, scary. That's not something that you want to do when your boss's wife is going to be in that man's administration. But let's continue. December 13th, what's happening in Syria right now is bad as humanity gets. Pray for Aleppo. It continues. January 10th, I can't underscore the importance of traveling. Getting out of our comfortable bubble makes us realize our way is not the only way. Oh, boy. January 10th, words matter. Hashtag Obama farewell. I'll let you go from here.
January 21st, he said, peaceful protest for equality is always good. Make your voices heard. Stand united. And that was the day of the Women's March. Later that week, he said humanity over politics. You know, he's been doing this, like we said, since the election. And it's important to note because as we were hearing reports during the 2016 election that the fiat from Vince McMahon was for people not to, for the wrestlers not to, former and current, to not talk about Donald Trump and his long relationship with wrestling.
The only wrestler that came out against anyone during that time was John Cena, but he did that on the Today Show.
Dick Cheney even said in this case, not American, not in line with our values. So just because you have some people in a rally who stand up and applaud it, that does not mean that it's in line with the values of this country.
The only reason I point that out is to say, well, this is appalling and who would ever support this? Yeah, well, people who support Donald Trump, some of them are do like what he's saying.
No, I wasn't speaking of you. I'm saying in general, this part of the conversation.
Brash. This is bold and this is brash. I'm with you. I don't know how it works out. The last time we did anything like this is in World War II, and that was one of the more reprehensible acts by the United States of America. We are the melting pot, except for you. That does not go along with our DNA. Right. Trump is being Trump. There's no other way to say it.
And hate begets hate.
And the only reason why we even know about this band is because Kofi Kingston talked about it on ESPN's Cheap Heat podcast during WrestleMania week.
Yes. You know, and also recently, Zayn had tweeted that he applauds Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for his efforts in cultivating a harmonious culture and celebrating diversity in our country. Proud to be Canadian. Another proud Canadian, also getting kind of low-key political on the WWE program on TV.
Universal champion.
Universal champion.
For now.
Yes. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, the day after the Quebec mosque attack, they both wore...
Which happened during the Royal Rumble.
Right.
Which is, well, clearly there's no good time for a massacre to happen, but this happened, I think, during Owens' match with Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
It's a heartbreaking thing.
Right, but the next day on Monday Night Raw, they both had armbands with a fleur-de-lis, a shout-out to Quebec, and Owens had tweeted, I guess, after the night of the Rumble.
The night of the Rumble, during the Rumble. So the last thing he tweets is, Bill Goldberg, I hope Bill Goldberg's opponent is in that door from last night, which is brilliant. And then this is all in French, so this is through Google Translate.
Yeah, we're stronger together. I just have learned what happened in St. Foy. I'm absolutely disgusted. I don't really know what to say more. My thoughts are with families of victims and with Quebec in full. My heart is empty at the moment. Take care of each other. Ignorance and intolerance have no place here. We're over that. We need to stay that way. Talk to your children.
So this is very interesting.
Yeah, and some comments, him breaking kayfabe on Twitter talked about a serious thing. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, real life best friends, obviously on screen, bitter enemies. But it was also a big week for Owens and his on screen best friend, Chris Jericho. Like we said at the Royal Rumble last Sunday, probably a good time to take a little recap of that. Everyone's kind of digested it, what it means for the road to WrestleMania. Chris Jericho was in the Rumble for an hour and 13 seconds. Zayn was second with 47 minutes and 12 seconds. Neither of them did win. We'll get to that in a second. We always look at the signs in the audience.
Signs are the best part about every WWE show. So there's a few things that you need to remember. They will be confiscated. I think everyone knows this. The best way to have a sign is to make a sign in the arena. Go in with a blank piece of cardboard and just marker it up and have some fun.
Yeah. And a few people did that. We saw a Rock for President sign.
That was not taken away. That was up multiple times throughout the night.
Right.
And here's my favorite sign.
Yeah. Trump 316.
That only came out once. Do you know when it came out?
When was that?
When Rusev came out. So some awesome dude, hard cam, center of the ring, was waiting for more than, if he was there for the pre-show, 5 hours to hold up a sign that said Trump 316 when the one wrestler that has ties to Putin, that was a brilliant Freudian slip of the tongue. I'm keeping that in the podcast. When Rusev came out, isn't that brilliant? Good for that hero.
Good for that guy. Also some resist signs. Yeah, so it was this is the voice of the people. This is a WWE audience bringing these signs and making these connections, showing us that we're not crazy conspiracy theorists, I don't think. I think the highlight of the night was the Cena-AJ match. You're shaking your head, but I think it was close to a five-star match.
I'm not shaking my head because it wasn't great. I just really enjoyed the Owens-Reigns match.
Yes.
And the fact that Reigns was probably concussed on the botched table spot with Strowman makes me respect the McMahon even more.
Yeah, especially since he had to go back out there, about an hour later.
And this is no shade to Cena Styles. That was amazing.
Right.
And I feel like they've already set the bar so high.
Right. There were some good callbacks. I was looking back at some of the other stuff they'd done where AJ hits the Styles Clash, goes to the ropes to finish the job with the forearm. This time Cena catches him. Last time at SummerSlam he didn't catch him, and he ate it, and he took the pin. So this time, and then having to super Cena up and do rolling attitude adjustments, which was pretty great. That was great. But, and this is, we mentioned Cena coming out in his non-wrestling life, which it is confusing, and this is the thing we run into a lot, this, especially this meta thing when a guy has the same name as his on-screen character that is his his real life kind of at 11. John Cena had tweeted on February 1st, "Now more than ever, any accomplishment will be met with resistance. Stay humble, stay focused, continue onward. Hashtag earn the day, hashtag never give it up."
Cena is the smartest subtweeter of Trump without losing his core fan base of young wrestling fans. If you don't follow politics, you don't know what the hell he's talking about. Resistance and resist are the two words that are most associated with the anti-Trump movement right now. John Cena is not adding hashtag resistance. The only time he's used a hashtag in recent memory on Twitter is on January 21st, the day of the Women's March, when he just blatantly said, "I'm proud to be American because of the Women's March."
Yeah, but generally it is within his brand, with his never give up, resist the authority. This is, you know, within his brand, but he is clearly winking at people who are watching for, you know, his brand outside of wrestling and what he could do in the future. It's kind of like what he does on Instagram, except that he's working marks and he like tweets a picture of Kenny Omega or tweets a picture of AJ Styles, or Instagrams, I should say. And but it's his Twitter is fascinating that way, that these kind of innocuous statements are clearly, when they're timed and if you're paying attention to politics, they're clearly political. Also, tough not to see the politics in for us in Randy Orton winning the Rumble. As not everybody knows, I don't think, is that he had been a Marine right after high school. But he had bad conduct discharge after going AWOL two times, disobeying an order from a commanding officer, and he was court-martialed. That's why he wasn't in one of the Marine films. We also noted this last year when we were at the Verizon Center for WWE's Tribute to the Troops, when Randy Orton pinned American Alpha and RKOing the faces that the American team was the most over thing at a show for and attended by troops.
I would also like to point out that I've never seen a general get booed in my life, because this was not on the TVs. They had a general come out, and the whole point was to get him some cheap pops so that he put over some people's wrestling moves. And the thing he closed with was, "We're going to give terrorists a Superman punch," and everyone booed him.
Because there's one thing, the Americans hate terrorists. But their hatred of Roman Reigns, wrestling fans' hatred of Roman Reigns might be, it's up there. Let's just say that. One thing you noticed, too, which is kind of interesting, is
so we're
Randy
members
Orton.
Of the press. We have access to many wonderful things, one of which is press releases for car shows. So the Washington, D.C. car show is every January, and it's a long event. There's a handful of these around the country. They last for like 2 weeks. And the bigger car shows, they always bring out a WWE superstar. In 2016, they brought out Roman Reigns. So they sent out the press release around November, December, and then the guy shows up either the last week in January or the first week in February, right after the Royal Rumble. This year, they sent out another press release. Roman Reigns is going to be at the DC car show. All right. All of a sudden, about 3-4 weeks ago, we changed the plans. Randy Orton is going to be at the DC car show. If you are able to find someone that will take a Royal Rumble bet, check who's playing the DC car show the next week. That's who's going to win the Royal Rumble.
We're going to have to test that in 2018. One guy that wasn't at the Rumble, but had a busy week and weekend, was Seth Rollins. On Saturday, he crashed NXT TakeOver to further his storyline with Triple H. Once again, with the tweets, "There's no turning back now. Rise, stand, TakeOver." Now, when you'd sent me this, I wasn't watching TakeOver live. And this was amidst Muslim ban weekend.
Okay, so this is directly the time we were just talking about earlier. Muslim ban weekend, impromptu protest across the country. The thing that was trending on hashtag wasn't NXT TakeOver, which you would know because the WWE likes to
tell
you. It was all of the people storming airports out of solidarity and support with the people that could not enter the country.
Yeah.
Which sounds exactly like rise, stand, takeover.
Except he was a takeover and he was rising and standing against Triple H, so not so much. So the next night, they're told there's security. Seth is banned from Royal Rumble and becoming the first face to actually go along with being banned from an arena. So he's not at the Rumble, but he's there on Monday for Monday Night Raw. And this was really weird. The story they're trying to tell here, that he's the face coming after Triple H, who everyone loves because it's Triple H, even if he's a heel, he's still the, even if he buries your favorite guys, he's still the guy running NXT who brings all your favorite indie wrestlers to WWE. So it's complicated that way. And then Seth kind of like threatened Stephanie and Triple H's kids, which is not really what a face does. And they tried to play it off as like, oh, it's Shades of Grey. But like Stone Cold like just gave a stunner to everybody. He didn't like, not your kids though.
Yeah, there was also this weird like sexual tension thing.
Yeah, he tried to like say that that Stephanie disappoints Triple H in bed, but also claim that basically like she likes looking at him. I don't know. It was very weird. That segment wasn't good. The one at the end where Triple H is like,
I am trying so hard not to be that guy anymore. I am trying so hard not to be that guy that ends careers and crushes dreams and injures people and doesn't give a crap about anybody or what anybody thinks. I am trying so hard not to be that guy anymore, to be something more. So every day I put on this suit. Every day I tie this stupid tie and I go to the office. And every day I try to put that behind me and I try to be a creator. I try to create something more for everybody here.
Seth Rollins comes out. He's blindsided by a debuting Samoa Joe to the main roster, and gets beaten down by Samoa Joe, and a little too real, unfortunately.
So, quick question: as a fan of Joe, do you think it would have been better for a debut to be at the Royal Rumble simply to get the music and the pop? Because we still haven't heard his music on WWE. We've only heard it on NXT.
You know, that's what I thought on Sunday, especially if we were going to have a Samoan come out at 30, it should be Samoa Joe. We got the other Samoan Joe, Roman Reigns, and that was disappointing at the time. I like the way they did it with the storyline and segue.
Not disagreeing with the storyline. I understand the storyline. It makes sense. But does the music matter?
Not as much as I think the surprise, the NWO coming storming is cooler.
I like that, but if this was Nakamura, I'd be furious because Nakamura's music deserves it.
See, Nakamura's does. Joe's is like the weird ooga booga. It's not great.
It's kind of Shield.
And
adjacent.
The last time they played it, and at their
real
last,
basic, it's pretty memorable, but it's not a great earworm.
Yeah, and at the last one of his last takeovers, they played like the wrong version of it when it had more of the like jungle noises. Anyway, so in this attack, Samoa Joe stood tall. He choked out Seth Rollins, but Seth Rollins actually hurt his knee for real. We're hearing a torn MCL is the rumor online. Could be out 8 weeks, which puts us right at the Royal Rumble. This was the knee that had been surgically repaired after he blew out every part of it last year. Took him out of action, or 2 years ago, actually. It was November.
I just feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, no, he comes back. He's in the storyline, which is like not the best, but he's doing, you know, they're being pushed to the top face, and then his knee goes out again. This is also Samoa Joe, like, I don't think there's any heat on him, but this is like the second time where he's done something with main roster people and they go down. Like, he accidentally broke Tyson Kidd's neck with the muscle buster. Now, the first time he puts hands on Rollins, his knee goes out. It's not great. Not to say that Joe's not a great worker and these things, this is like they say, it's not ballet. So what this actually has done for wrestling fans has thrown Mania into kind of chaos. Triple H and Rollins were clearly headed for like a main event level match.
Which is fine.
Yeah, it's fine. But it's probably not going to happen now because they're not going to push Rollins out there, a guy who still has values, still a young guy, 29, 30 years old. If it's like, maybe his knee can go. You don't know if they're going to do it at this point. And so that's kind of like the rumors that they're looking for plan Bs and plan Cs here is that, you know, Triple H could face Joe, which they'll have to kind of start figuring out the turn, do it pretty quick. They only got 2 months. A ready-to-go storyline that I think was great for wrestling fans and for what the story that WWE has been telling for 20 years is Triple H versus Shane McMahon.
Or Jared Kushner versus Eric Trump. Everything is for daddy's love.
Yeah, and as we've pointed out before on the show, Jared Kushner is Donald Trump's son-in-law, who's in a prominent position in the White House as an
advisor.
If you've
turned CNN on once in the last 2 weeks and you've seen Donald Trump at any sort of table, you've also seen Jared.
Yeah, he's married to Ivanka, and this is one of the things we've talked a lot about on this podcast and we talk about in our book, is that the crazy kind of coincidences between Donald Trump's life and Vince McMahon's life. And one of them with the son-in-law stuff is that his son-in-law seems to have surpassed his own sons in the pecking order, much like Triple H has definitely surpassed Shane McMahon. I mean, he's an executive. He's a high-level executive by marrying the boss's daughter.
And Shane is simply a storyline character right now. He is no longer in the back figuring out what's going to happen. He's no longer part of the business for now. That might change.
And I would recommend, if you're interested in the backstage stuff or even just the business of sports and entertainment or sports entertainment, I would check out a feature from Vice called Inside the Business of the WWE. Kind of looked at some of this stuff of Shane coming back, of how that almost was a backstage thing as well.
And it put simply, if all of this sounds too complicated and too boring or kind of conspiracy theory, just listen to this complete work shoot promo that CM Punk cut about Triple H.
And I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead. But the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
That's all you need to know.
So this whole father-son dynamic, which keeps showing up in wrestling and also in politics, because, you know, like we're saying, we wrote about this in the book, Donald Trump took over his business from his father in the late 70s, and then in the 80s kind of threw away the rules that his father used of just doing this, you know, these small housing projects in the outer boroughs, and took on Manhattan and became the Donald Trump, the figure we know, this guy synonymous with the 80s. Vince McMahon took over the WWF in the late 70s and early 80s and rejected the rules of the territory system, put his competition mostly out of business, did WrestleMania. I mean, that part of the narrative of what they did, you know, we talked about that before with the small businesses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't talk about the shady business practices and any competitive stuff they did, but there is this parallel. There is this kind of building on what their fathers did, but rejecting their father's norms. And this kind of, you know, that's been, I think, a joke in some of the Trump stuff is that, like, he's doing it for his father's approval or something. That's always been a narrative with wrestling fans of what Vince is doing to go against his father.
Absolutely.
And what his kids are doing. And so it is this kind of like generational thing. And it's a relationship that really, I think, illuminates a lot of how Vince McMahon and Donald Trump both work. And this was another angle of this, which we talk about in the book, is the XFL.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the XFL.
So the XFL was, according to the documentary, this was the XFL. The first football league to take on the NFL, which is wrong.
Yes. So anyway, let's step back just a second. So there was a 30 for 30 documentary on ESPN this week. This was the XFL. It was directed by Charlie Ebersol. And if that name sounds familiar to sports or sports entertainment fans, it's because his father is Dick Ebersol, former head of NBC Sports, NBC, who had a long relationship with Vince McMahon. And this is something that this basically drives this documentary.
It's arguable that without Dick, Vince has the reign he has now. Dick Ebersol was the guy that was like, yeah, we're going to do Saturday night's main event. Without that, we don't really have the rock and wrestling connection. We don't really have the pomp and circumstance of WrestleMania. We don't have Andy Warhol showing up backstage. We don't have Mr. T. And without that mainstream crossover, we don't have the WWE as we know it. Dick Ebersol is probably the most important man in the WWE that's never wrestled.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and that's the Saturday night main event was exactly what it sounds like, but it was an NBC program. It was wrestling back on the networks, which I don't believe it had happened in a while. I mean, since the early days of TV.
So when we say the networks, we don't mean local. Local, it's always been on television. It never stopped. It still is. That's why you're able to see, like, Ring of Honor on local stations across the country. We're talking about networks. So this is on NBC. This is on at the same time as Saturday Night Live.
This is like an 8 o'clock. Yeah, this is a nighttime thing across the nation. And, yeah, those storylines, that was a lot of Americans first seeing Hulk Hogan in the run-up to the first WrestleMania. So this documentary about the XFL, which was Vince McMahon's attempt to kind of bring the pro wrestling world to the pro football game. And it's kind of crazy. Like you said, Donald Trump had done this. He had been part of the USFL in the early 80s, which had a very different story, also covered in a 30 for 30.
Yeah, exactly. There's already that documentary was fantastic.
Yes.
Probably because the son of the owner didn't make it.
Yeah, and this whole, the documentary, it's definitely entertaining. I would check out, this was the XFL. There was stuff I didn't know, even though we've researched this.
There was not one thing I didn't know, because we researched this.
Okay, I have one thing I didn't know, but we will get to that. It does this thing where it definitely breezes through WWE history, and it breezes through a lot of this. And I mean, yeah, it's the Dick Ebersole's son. He admits in some of the outtake stuff that he's been to wars, like WWE announcer Michael Cole. But his scariest thing was interviewing his father, which is like, yeah, maybe the journalistic distance you needed wasn't quite there. But one of the things I think wrestling fans have seen from this documentary is how much it is WWE propaganda and hagiography and breezes over so much stuff. Yeah, I don't think expect in a documentary about the XFL that they're going to show everything about the rise of the WWE and the WWF. But they do breeze through pretty quickly and close with a thing saying that basically, yes, Donald Trump, there's another Freudian slip for you. Vince McMahon conquered WCW and he united wrestling around the world.
Which, yeah, it ends with a still of that.
Yeah, like that's his great accomplishment, even though, as we know, as wrestling fans, that there's other wrestling than WWE, just not in, if you ask Vince McMahon.
If you watch WWE programming for the last 30 years, you're only now just finding out about other promotions.
Yeah, if you just watched it, they would say, this guy wrestled around the world, but they would never mention the name, and now they do. Just kind of going through some of the things that were interesting in this documentary, it shows how much that the XFL had problems from the start, and that this was kind of, everything was going to have to go right to take on the NFL. Even if you're Vince McMahon, even if you got NBC's backing. One of the things they had was they were trying to get commentators who weren't their NBC's regular NFL commentators. So they got Jesse Ventura. At the time, the sitting governor of Minnesota, a former WWE announcer, a former wrestler. And they brought up how weird that was, having a sitting governor working commentary on a sports program.
It's like, wait a minute, that's what we're trying to do here with the XFL. And for the lack of anyone more talented, Jesse got a job.
You know what they didn't bring up?
What's that?
Donald Trump.
They did not bring Donald Trump
up. Not once.
Not once.
It's not like they didn't have any reason to, because at this exact same time, this is the WrestleMania that was at Madison Square Garden,
where Jesse Ventura interviewed Donald Trump in the audience. A guy who ran, like we said, helped run a competitor to the NFL. But it's also kind of comparable to the fact that we have a sitting president who's also serving as the executive producer of an NBC program called Celebrity Apprentice, hosted by a WWE Hall of Famer.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You know, we say this stuff and we connect these dots, and we realize that we sometimes sound like conspiracy theorists, but these people work in a very small world where they're running into each other a lot, and they think the same way. And Vince McMahon and Donald Trump and your Ebersoles and your Schwarzeneggers, there's something to be taken from what they've learned from a wrestling promoter and how they've applied that to their own lives.
And probably the most valuable lesson that they've learned, that the rest of the country is now learning, that we've known for a while, and any other journalist that's known for a while, is you're not going to get certain access to it because you are the enemy. You
yes.
are the enemy of Vince McMahon. You are the enemy of Donald Trump if you are a member of the media.
We're here to have fun. That's what we do for a living. It's honesty, something that you, the media, don't know a whole hell of a lot about.
What about the criticism? Come on, bring it. Are you going to go right about us and not ask the question?
Oh, no. The World Wrestling Federation's now into football. I don't care about those people.
Unfortunately for the media, you know, who just can't wait for this to die, I would hope that they would die before the XFL does. Thank you very much.
So that's Vince during the XFL days. That's how he was dealing with the media when they were questioning him about very real things like, why are you doing this? How are you going to succeed? And he immediately took a confrontational tone with them and made them the enemy. He, you know, this big part of it is in the documentary, goes over his interview with Bob Costas, that it looked like Vince was going to reach over and, I don't know, choke slam, Superman punch, pick your finishing move on Bob Costas.
If you could be guaranteed that it would increase ratings, would you fix the games?
What a ridiculous statement.
It's not a statement, it's a question.
It's a question, I beg your pardon, it's a question. No, it's either football or it's not.
The only reason why Vince agreed to the interview is because he kind of had to, because this was for NBC. The XFL was a partnership with NBC. Bob Costas, this is not talked about in the documentary, was a former friend of the WWF. I highly recommend the Talk is Jericho podcast with Charlie Ebersol. You're going to learn way more stuff than you are from watching the film. You're not going to miss anything. This is my favorite anecdote from that podcast is Bob Costas liked it so much in like the 80s, him, Andre, and Hogan went to a White Castle after an event, I think at the Garden. Like, this is a guy that understands wrestling. He likes this stuff. He understands the divorce between reality and fake sport. But he's also still a journalist, first and foremost, and that does not jive at all with Vince McMahon.
Yeah, and Vince, in the revisiting this, he said that he had no experience being interviewed like that by a confrontational interviewer, which is false. Because we've seen the videos. In the early 90s, when the WWF was under siege from various scandals, steroid scandal, there were some sex scandals, he did the news magazine talk show circuit. He was on Donahue. He, you know, wrestlers were on, and their accusers, the WWF's accusers, were on Geraldo.
And the Donahue episode, I highly recommend. I think it's on Daily Beast or something like right. that. It's not on YouTube. It's an hour long of Vince McMahon getting grilled by both Donahue and the crowd, and people confronting him about steroid use and sexual assault. It's not comfortable. Right. He's done this on television.
He's also done it in a federal courthouse when he was indicted for, you know, a steroid scandal in the 90s.
Do you mean the McMahon's 9/11?
A few years ago, some people tried to destroy my family. They attacked my father's reputation. They attacked my mother's reputation. And they attacked the World Wrestling Federation. They tried to rip us apart, but all they did was make my family stronger. And that's exactly how America feels right now. Because on Tuesday, America was attacked. But America is a united nation. And together, we stand strong. I am incredibly proud to be an American citizen. And I will stand up for my rights and my freedom.
The Vince versus the media is definitely the biggest takeaway from this. And that, like you were alluding to, that's the biggest thing we should be taking away from what's happening in politics right now.
I want to bring up one last point about This Was the XFL. I sadly do not think it could have been better because Charlie showed the film to his dad and to Vince and everybody in Connecticut at Titan before it was released. So the guy's already not going to make a real film.
Right.
And no one is going to get that access unless it's the son of someone like
that. It's the son of someone involved. You don't get interviews with Vince where he's not going to be working you. There was really, unless you're going to do it totally from media reports and from the other people involved, but you're not going to get the principles and there's going to be something missing. So it is that type of sacrifice you make. But yeah, it is, you don't get, you know, you get people like John Coachman, a former WWE on-screen character.
He
has wrestlers on ESPN, but saying things like, everything that fails isn't a failure, which is just an amazing double talk in the WWE, like, propaganda machine. So, but we have this, as we're seeing in politics, like a lot of people aren't used to dealing with someone like Vince who's always working you and always staying to their message and attacking the press. But that's what we have with Donald Trump, and that's the thing that one of the things apparently he's taken away from working with Vince McMahon for over 30 years.
It's one of the things that people like to dismiss as always dumb, where I'm like, no, this guy's really smart. This is how to play the game.
Yeah, I mean, and clearly you mean Triple H the game.
Yeah, all of the instructions of how to be the president are Triple H's theme song, The Game.
Yeah, or you just have to be a cerebral assassin like Triple H. You know, we've seen this this started last year, but it's been the drumbeat of Trump this whole time, is to dismiss anything as fake news, which is funny because we're always talking about fake sports. And I think this is as good a time as any to have our alternative fact of the week.
Alternative fact.
Still real to me, damn it!
It's time to mourn the Bowling Green Massacre.
Yeah, in this kind of bizarre thing this week, as trying to explain why we're going to have a Muslim ban, Trump spokeswoman Kellyanne Conway mentioned the Bowling Green Massacre. No Bowling Green Massacre exists. There was two guys from Bowling Green who were in federal prison because they tried to help Iraq. There was no massacre. There was no planned massacre. They were like sending weapons and information and money to Iraq. But she just made out of, I'll call it the Bowling Green Massacre. And Kellyanne Conway a couple weeks ago had said, you know, that there's alternative facts. So this is something we're going to have to deal with, whether, you know, it's real or not, for the next 4 years.
12, by the way. I've said this since November 9th. Trump's going to be a three-term president.
Yeah, that's... I mean, if you think the authority storyline and the Vince McMahon storyline is long, wait till you have a 12-year Trump presidency. The Bowling Green Massacre, the first thing came to mind for me as a wrestling fan, is In Your House, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, February 14th, 1999. A great thing to watch on the network for $9.99. This has a great Mankind and Rock Last Man Standing match. It has a cage match between Stone Cold Steve Austin and, I believe, making his in-ring debut, Vince McMahon.
Yeah, the poster is Vince with a bouquet of flowers.
Yeah, and if you search for this, there's a great visual of Vince McMahon having bladed himself, covered in blood, with two middle fingers up to Stone Cold. It's great. But this is also the debut of someone we mentioned earlier, of The Big Show, Paul White, coming through a hole in the canvas to throw Stone Cold so hard into the cage that that the cage swings open and he wins the match, kind of setting the tone for Big Show's big dumb career.
Don't make fun of Big Show.
No, he's a great guy. We love The Big Show. Looking forward to him facing Shaq at WrestleMania.
That'll be the he's gonna 5-star Shaq show.
Yeah, that's the match of the night. I'm calling it now. We've seen Trump also, you know, as he's saying fake news this week, he also tweeted the Democrats and the media are the opposition party with the focus on the media. And this is actually just echoing something that has been said by his chief advisor, Steve Bannon. This quote here from Steve Bannon: "The media should be embarrassed and humiliated and keep its mouth shut and just listen for a while. I want you to quote this. The media here is the opposition party. They don't understand this country. They still do not understand why Donald Trump is the president of the United States." Now,
I think you and I know why.
we know why. So there's some parts of this that are debatable of whether or not the media should keep its mouth shut, since that is its role in democracy. But yes, the media does not seem to understand why Donald Trump. Now, we and Steve Bannon would probably disagree. Steve Bannon, Democrats, us and Democrats would all maybe disagree about what that is. But it really is for us that Donald Trump has been running since the first day he announced his campaign in 2015. He's been running as a heel.
Yeah.
He has never had a face turn. He's never pivoted, in the political jargon, would be a face turn.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say it's good or bad, not to say it's rigged. We're not saying that like wrestling, that's a predetermined ending. We're saying that if you want to beat a heel, you have to be a really good face.
That's it. It's
and
that
you don't,
simple.
You know, you don't take a thesis to a cage match. You have to work with on this level. And it seems to be something that Steve Bannon understands. You know, he says the media should keep its mouth shut. And the first thing I thought of was The Rock with "shut your mouth." But that's the second part, which is "know your role." A quote from Bannon back in the summer 2016: "Trump is a blunt instrument for us. I don't know whether he really gets it or not." So there's kind of Bannon in two quotes, understanding the premise of "know your role and shut your mouth" from The Rock. And maybe Trump knows his role, maybe he doesn't.
I'll tell you what I think. It doesn't matter what you think. Now what you do, Michael Cole, is you sit your ass down at that announcer booth, you take off your headset, and you don't say a word. And I quote, you know your damn role and shut your damn